This is the story about...
I want to do it too.
Okay.
One, two.
This is Precious Lives.
Stories about kids.
Teens.
Guns.
Guns.
And how we end the violence.
Bye-bye.
Because we are precious.
I'm Eric Vaughn. This is Precious Lives.
The first half of 2015 has been an exciting time for leaders at Milwaukee's Sojourner Family Peace Center. The organization announced recently it's exceeded its fundraising goal of $26 million to build a new facility at 6th and Walnut on Milwaukee's north side. And groundbreaking has happened for the facility, which will house multiple agencies that serve domestic violence victims under a single roof. That model puts Sojourner at the forefront of the national effort to better serve domestic violence victims and their families. As part of our Precious Lives series, we're joined by Casey Gwynn, president of the National Family Justice Center Alliance, and by Sojourner's executive director, Carmen Petrie. Carmen Petrie, what makes Sojourner's approach distinctive?
I think for us, what we would say is unique and distinctive is the level of collaboration and partnership that we've been able to achieve on behalf of families impacted by domestic violence. It really is unique that Children's Hospital, Milwaukee Police Department, District Attorney's Office, Sojourner, Milwaukee Public Schools, Bureau of Milwaukee Child Welfare, Jewish Family Services, Legal Action of Wisconsin, have all made a commitment to co-locate our services on behalf of families.
Well, and so let me ask a fairly simple question, but one that people might not necessarily understand intuitively. Why is it important to have all of these services in one place?
Well, the reality is that across the United States and for decades, even in Wisconsin, victims have to go from place to place to place and tell their story over and over and over again. And if there's domestic violence and child abuse, then there are even more places they have to go. And if there's sexual assault, there's even more places they have to go. And the reality is that when victims have to navigate that maze, they give up and they go back to their abuser and the violence continues and children continue to be exposed to the trauma. And we fail at really breaking that cycle. Mm-hmm. When you can put everybody under one roof and get everybody to work together, it changes the world for victims and their kids. And it sounds like a really simple, straightforward idea, but it's really hard to do.
Well, and so then there's an obvious question to ask. If this is such a simple, straightforward, and sense-making idea, mm-hmm. why isn't it done more often?
I think, you know, good partnerships are built on relationships. And so we have to focus on the relationships that we have with each other. And I would also say we have to refocus on our mission in a different way and think about how, not how we're doing the great job that a lot of us are doing, but how are we dropping the ball or asking ourselves really critical questions? How can I do better for families? And when you begin to discern those kinds of questions, you see that even in the midst of good work, there's more that could be done and should be done. So I would say focus on relationships and use those relationships to get yourself beyond the barriers that come up, because there are barriers. You know, change is difficult for a lot of people, and some of us, for Sojourner, we've been around 40 years. But when you focus on the mission and how we could do better, you inevitably muster up the courage, I think, to do the work differently.
Are there territorial issues? I mean, many of the organizations that will all be under one roof, I would imagine, felt that they were doing right by victims of domestic violence already.
Good agencies and good people still tend to silo in the work that they do. Police kind of do their own thing. Prosecutors do their own thing. Advocates do their own thing. The medical people are over here. The mental health people are over here. All committed people, committed organizations doing good work. But it doesn't change the lived experience for those survivors that still have to go from place to place to place. So challenging that paradigm and saying, you know what, we really can do child abuse and domestic violence work together. We really can and have to work with adults and children at the same time. And this focus on children is crucial. In America, we raise our criminals at home, and the vast majority of those that we lock up in the criminal justice system, both the juvenile justice system and the adult criminal justice system, are coming out of homes with some mix of child abuse and domestic violence and or drugs and alcohol. And when you put an overlay of racial disparities, oppression, poverty over the top of that, it gets even uglier and worse. And so we've got to figure out how to get from the bottom of the cliff cliff to the top of the cliff. And unmitigated childhood trauma is the great challenge of our generation, because those are the kids that end up in the juvenile justice system. Those are the kids that end up in prison. Those are the pilots that end up flying planes into the sides of mountains. When you don't deal with that trauma from childhood, you have profound implications for society and costs attached to it. And the morality of this model is to say, we've got to get to the top of the cliff. We've got to get to before, and we can only do that together.
Is it oversimplifying things then to take what you said and say, you know, this means what you're saying is that childhood trauma victims who are treated better when their children are less likely to become perpetrators of abuse?
Absolutely. We've got a 20-year longitudinal study in the United States called the Adverse Childhood Experience Study that's now been administered in 25 different states, including Wisconsin. And they've been looking at these trauma scores from childhood. There's 10 trauma markers that are looked at in the ACEs study. And when you start seeing a child with 3 markers, 4 markers, mm-hmm. 5 markers, you're seeing profound implications. Suicidality goes up 1,200%. The likelihood of later being sexual assaulted goes up over 800%. The likelihood of actually suffering heart disease goes up 4,600% later in life because of childhood trauma. So if we can figure out how to deal with that together, that's why it's so amazing to have Wisconsin Children's Hospital involved in this. If we can deal with the child piece early enough and comprehensively enough, we're going to have a lot less folks in jails and prisons 20 years from now if we really get serious about breaking the cycle.
Have there been challenges in this model in other cities that you have learned from and that inform how Milwaukee is taking this on?
Well, you know, for us, we did quite a bit of conversation with other centers around the country, and we found, as Casey will tell you, we found a lot of centers that had moved in together, but there weren't integrated services. So early on, we started to talk about how we could be different and integrate our services tightly on behalf of families and kids so that we could really offer them a continuum of services.
Well, and one of the things that Carmen Petrie has brought to Milwaukee in this journey with the Family Peace Center is this set of relationships that have been built over many years. You have relationships between the police and the prosecutors and the Family Peace Center. You have relationships with Children's Hospital and all these other partners. This is not about a building. This is about relationships.
Right.
If you hate each other, you really shouldn't get married and move in together. It's not going to end well.
Right.
First, you have to like each other. Then you have to have a relationship. Then you have to trust each other. Then you have to be willing to say, we're going to start doing our jobs differently because we live together. We're going to be accountable to each other. We're going to be accountable to survivors and how we provide the services. And we're going to change the way we do business in order to change the outcomes. And that's the goal of this. And it didn't happen yesterday, and it didn't happen 6 months ago or even 7 or 8 years ago. This started 20 plus years ago with relationships that slowly emerged and evolved and developed. And it's those relationships that I think are now going to be transformative in how this work goes forward.
I agree. It's the relationships that allow you to ask the hard questions that need to be asked.
Well, and you described the old paradigm in mm-hmm. which someone who might have been a victim of domestic violence would have to tell his or her story mm-hmm. over and over and over again. Explain how this new model works. Is there a single intake? And I mean, how is a person who, you know, a woman who's been a victim of mm-hmm. domestic violence who comes to this new center, what will greet her when she gets there?
So you'll be greeted by a navigator. Which is essentially is an advocate who will help you, welcome you to the center, do an intake, and then help you navigate the range of services that you might choose to receive on any given day, and then begin the relationship of helping you interact with all the partners. We are pursuing an integrated intake system. We are looking at a shared database. In May, Casey will be back here to help us with our strategic planning. We'll be developing shared vision, operating principles, and a problem-solving framework that will help us not only live together, but integrate our services and really make services as efficient and effective as we can.
as you say, the Milwaukee model has more partners than any other model that's out there. With that number of partners must come its own set of challenges.
Absolutely. It's very complicated. And you have to build this whole process around client choice. It's got to be a choice-based model. And a survivor's got to be able to decide who she talks to and who she doesn't want to talk to. You got to figure out when to share information and when not to share information. But I will say that if you look historically at the battered women's movement in America, it tends to be that when women die, people aren't sharing enough information to keep her alive.
Right.
Everybody's siloed. Everybody's focused on confidentiality. And it's not true that everybody keeping a secret produces more safety for the vast majority of women. We have to be responsible. We have to let her make choices about what she wants to do. But when we share information responsibly and the victim is part of the solution and not just viewed as the problem, you can save lives. And we've seen massive drops. In San Diego, after the opening of the San Diego Family Justice Center in 2002, we celebrated a 90% drop in domestic violence homicides by 2008. That wasn't a coincidence. It wasn't an accident. It was because we had 25 agencies working together in 40,000 square feet in downtown and letting the victim drive the process, but giving her all the support she needed so that she wanted to engage with everybody. She didn't want to stay siloed. She didn't want to be alone. Right. She wanted to be part of a community that would support her.
It's all about good relationships and communication and really helping survivors make the choices that they need to make and that they're ready to make, and really supporting them in navigating the journey that they're on.
I think the thing that's most exciting for me about what's going on in Milwaukee right now is not just that it's going to be a model for the state of Wisconsin and it's going to be a model for the nation, but it is an opportunity to engage the community in a way that has never existed before. In the domestic violence movement, shelters are a secret place and everything they do is a secret and the public can't engage, and you're never going to break the cycle of domestic violence if everything's a secret and nobody can talk about it and nobody can engage. The Family Peace Center Collaborative is going to be a place where the public can engage. You cannot just engage as a donor. You can engage as a volunteer. You can get involved in agencies that are working with the center, that are partners in the center. You can get involved in mentoring. We're looking forward to seeing some kind of camping and mentoring model develop as part of this. We have a national camping model now for children exposed to domestic violence that lets the public engage fully in working with kids with high trauma indexes and high trauma scores from childhood. You can either love those kids when they're 7, 8, 9, 10, or you can wait and lock them up when they're 15 or 16 or 17 and say you're tough on crime. And this isn't all about a government program. The government's important in this, but this is about the whole community engaging. You know, everybody says, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. That's kind of true. It matters who's in the village, and it matters what the village is doing with children, what they're saying to children, and how engaged they are in helping to mitigate trauma in children. That's what Family Peace Center has the potential to become.
Carmen Petrie, Casey Gwynn, thank you so much.
Thanks, Mitch.
Thank you.
Carmen Petrie is Executive Director of Sojourner Family Peace Center in Milwaukee. Casey Gwynn is President of the National Family Justice Center Alliance. Construction work is underway on Sojourner's new Family Justice Center building at 6th and Walnut.
Precious Lives is produced by 371 Productions in association with WUWM, WNOV, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. We're supported by the Greater Milwaukee Foundation and the Isabel and Alfred Bader Fund. Music by Kiran V of Fresh Cut Collective.